everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's December 2024, and this is episode 422, which is a spoiler-filled book review about the novel Upgrade by best-selling author Blake Crouch, who is also the author of Dark Matter. Today's guest is Rebecca Valerius. She has a BS in biochemistry from the University of Texas at Arlington and an MA in apologetics from Houston Christian University. She is a founding member of the Society for Women of Letters. Rebecca has written an online book review article for the Christian Research Journal, and her review is called Gene Editing and the Abolition of Man, A Reflection on Upgrade by Blake Crouch and the New Science of CRISPR. You can read her book review for free at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. Rebecca, it's good to have you back on the podcast.
It's good to be here.
Well, today we're talking about a novel, and this author, Blake Crouch, has become quite popular in pop culture. He had one of his novels called Dark Matter, which we will be covering with one of our writers, Melissa Kane Travis, next year in early 2025. He had that novel adapted into an Apple Plus TV series, which became the number one series back in the summer of 2024. And so he has become really popular in terms of his work. And so this is one of his newer novels, and I think he's going to get a lot of people reading it, because people who did not know that Dark Matter was based on a novel suddenly realized, oh, this guy has written a lot of other books, and I'd like to read them. And so Blake Crouch has written another book. It's one of his newest ones from a couple of years ago, and he always takes science or some kind of scientific theme and weaves it into basically, I would say, fast-moving thrillers that are also, if you read them, they read like action movies. So they're like an action movie you'd see in the theater with, you know, chases or tense moments, but also there's science embedded into it. So the particular novel that we're talking about this podcast is called Upgrade, and it deals with gene editing. So first of all, I want to ask Rebecca, is there anything in your background that really interested you about his novel, Blake Crouch's novel, Upgrade?
Yeah. So I'll say I was drawn to Upgrade through Dark Matter. So I'm one of those people. my husband and I really enjoyed it. Although, you know, I don't know, it seems somewhat scientifically accurate, but it was definitely scientifically informed. And so when I saw that he had written something on gene editing, I was like, this is a no-brainer for me, because I have a background in biochemistry. I actually spent years in the lab after I got my degree. I was going to do graduate work. And in the lab, we were basically doing a lot of the precursors to this gene editing. We were splicing human genes into bacterial genomes so that we could do structural analysis for drug design and all kinds of cool things like that. And, but more importantly, I now teach biology and chemistry at a classical Christian school. So, I'm obligated to stay, up to date on the latest technology. And I really had not realized how far this gene editing technology had gotten since I had last heard of it. I'd been sort of out of the science field. So, I thought, you know, it was a great introduction into, what has happened in that field for me, his book was, because I mean, I really think I have to prepare my students to understand some of these latest techniques, because, you know, obviously they're going to encounter them if they pursue careers in the field. But also at a Christian school, we get to think through the ethical issues surrounding these new technologies. So it's such a blessing to be able to integrate philosophical and theological discussions around these technologies. And I think a novel like Upgrade really highlights some of the ethical issues that perhaps just a dry sort of scientific discussion doesn't, because it does put it in this sort of real life situations with real people and or characters that he's drawn to be very realistic. And I agree, it's very fast paced. It kind of reminds me, I was telling my husband, of the John Grisham novels and how so many of those were adapted so well into movies at the time. And I would not be surprised if that happens with a lot of these books by Crouch.
We will talk a little bit later just about the ethics of some of his theses in this book, you know, with a little bit of sci-fi or just otherworldliness that we're like, oh yeah, that wouldn't happen in real life. Maybe.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. But I did hear an interview with him regarding all of his books, just saying, is it possible that science could go unchecked? And, you know, this person is not a Christian. Should there be some kind of ethics around these things? But first, before we get to all that, I'd like you to give us maybe a lay version of what gene editing is and what CRISPR is. And also, if you're a longtime listener to this podcast, you know, back in 2023, I interviewed one of our authors, Jay Watts. He did an article for us called CRISPR Cures in the New World of Gene Editing, which is kind of like a very basic intro. So we will definitely link that in the article and also in the show notes. But that was a long time ago, more than a year ago. So can you give us a non-specialist description of what this is?
Yeah, sure, sure. And that is an excellent article by him. I read that as well. So CRISPR, it's CRISPR. It's one of, biologists do this all the time. My students are like, why do they name things so strange? I'm like, I don't know. It's just the way it is. But it stands for, it's an acronym for clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats. But don't get hung up on that. The main thing is, it's just an acronym that they use to describe it. So it is a naturally occurring bacterial defense mechanism that has this ability to genetically modify infecting viruses. So I don't think a lot of people realize that bacteria are also vulnerable to viral infections, just like we are. And in fact, it is estimated that there are as many as 10 raised to the power of 31 different viruses that infect bacteria exclusively. They're called bacteriophages. And the number shouldn't surprise us because bacteria are the most abundant life form on the planet. A single teaspoon of water contains 5 times more viruses than there are people in New York City. That's a stat that I got from one of the books I read. But the really interesting thing about this is just as our own bodies' immune systems have sophisticated ways to fight off viral pathogens, bacterial populations have their own complex defense mechanisms, and scientists have been studying this for several decades. And so a little over a decade ago, around 2012, scientists discovered one such system that's able to mutate viral DNA, infecting it in a remarkably precise and repeatable way. It can just go in and very specifically mutate down to the level of a single nucleotide. So a single nucleotide would be, if you know the genetic code, the ATGC. It's just one of those letters. So driven by the desire to cure diseases that result from mutations just like that in humans, diseases like sickle cell anemia, cystic fibrosis, another terrible one called Huntington's disease, researchers were driven to reconfigure this CRISPR mutation mechanism so that it could be actually used in mammalian cells like ours. Scientists have identified, I think, over 4,000 different kinds of DNA mutations that cause disease. So you can see how they would be really excited about this discovery.
So one thing I want to ask you is something that we noted in our article from 2023, and that is that CRISPR is being used to help people with long-term diseases or genetic diseases like sickle cell. So how widespread is it in terms of its use and trying to, you know, innovate within it for, you know, various advances?
Yeah. So one of the books that I consulted for my research is called A Crack in Creation. I highly recommend it. It's pretty readable. She does get into some of the details of the science, so it might lose some people, but it's still, she's just a very good writer. It's a co-authored book. But she's the woman, her name is Jennifer Doudna. She actually won the 2020 Nobel Prize in Chemistry for her work in reconfiguring CRISPR for use in mammalian cells. So this book came out in 2017. So that was almost 8 years ago. And she herself was quite astounded at how the science just took off overnight once they did their first article publishing, I think 2012. Just overnight, she just started having all these people send her stuff for other labs using what she shared in that article and doing all kinds of other things with it. So here are just a few things that she listed. And this is just a few. They have been able to genetically modify, first, one of the biggest things is crops. So they genetically modify crops using this CRISPR so that they are pest and weather resistant. There's a huge push to do that to try to help poor countries, you know, weather famines and such as that. They've created like slow ripening vegetables that don't ripen as fast. They've created mosquitoes that can't transmit malaria. I think there's things underway to make mosquitoes unable to reproduce, so we might eventually wipe them out. They've created ultra muscular police dogs. So they learned how to, there's a naturally occurring mutation in a protein involved in muscle building called myostatin. Well, some people naturally get that mutation and, you know, you can have these four-year-old children with these huge muscles because they have that. Well, scientists studying that disease said, oh, well, maybe we can do this to like police dogs and make them super strong. And they've done that. They've made cows that make more meat. China gene edited pigs so that they would never grow past about 30 pounds. So they're called micro pigs. So people could have them as pets. And of course, CRISPR has successfully cured at least one woman that I know of. And I think Jay Watts mentioned that in his article. They cured one woman of the sickle cell disease. And then, of course, the very disturbing thing, and even Dr. Doudna was quite disturbed by this, just a few years after the discovery and adaptation of CRISPR, a Chinese researcher created the first gene-edited human babies, edited so that they were resistant to HIV. There are some people that are actually naturally resistant to HIV, and it has something to do with one of their proteins. And he was able to gene edit these babies when they were in the embryonic stage so that they had that same mutation to their protein so that they would be resistant. But obviously he had to do a lot of research on human embryos for this. And he was pretty widely condemned at the time. He was even tried by the Chinese government and banned from further research. But latest news is he's back in the lab. I think NPR ran an article maybe a year or so ago on him. He's back researching. So yeah, pretty amazing stuff.
Yes, he was quite controversial.
Yeah.
Well, it's now the end of the year. I can't believe 2025 is almost coming to a close and it's December. And so at this time of year, we like to ask our faithful listeners and people that pray for the work of the Christian Research Journal to consider giving us a partnering donation to close out the end of the year. And one of the ways that you can do that is just to give us a straight up donation with a tip or something maybe even a little bit more than a tip at the end of the year. And you can do that by going to equip.org. And then you'll see underneath the title of Christian Research Institute, there's various categories. If you click on journal, what pops up is the way you can support us. You can see a category for that at the very end of that headline. Just click there to support the Christian Research Journal. Or you can access any one of our many thousands upon thousands of articles under Christian Articles. We've, of course, got the Postmodern Realities podcast, where all of our more than 420 Episodes are located, as well as our newer podcast that just debuted this year, Christian Research Journal Reads. If you have appreciated accessing all of our free articles without an online subscription or a paywall, or have been a faithful listener to the Postmodern Realities podcast, plus like listening to actual audio versions of our articles, we would ask that you would prayerfully consider giving us a partnering gift. Now, you could just give us a gift straight out and support us with a financial donation, or if you would like a resource as our thank you from various contributing writers who have been featured on this Postmodern Realities podcast, then just scroll down a little bit halfway down the page and you'll see four resources that we are offering currently from some of our journal writers. And of course, we know you could get these books easily, probably discounted at your favorite online bookseller, but we ask that you give us a partnering donation to help us continue to bring you all of this free content. And you are not only equipping yourself, but you're equipping others who care about understanding what they believe and why they believe it worldwide. So thank you for your consideration. And we are so grateful for your faithful prayers, for supporting this podcast just by listening, and also just by sharing episodes and telling other people about it. And now back to my conversation about the fascinating novel Upgrade by Blake Crouch with our guest today, Rebecca Valerius. So you talked about some controversial things that were done, particularly that one Chinese scientist, but what are some of the benefits and also risks associated with using gene editing?
Yeah, so benefit-wise, obviously devastating genetic conditions like sickle cell anemia, cystic fibrosis. There's certain forms of muscular dystrophy that could really soon be things of the past if they're able to get better at using CRISPR to help alleviate those kind of diseases that are a result of genetic mutation. And another benefit is CRISPR, and Dr. Doudna really herself right now promotes CRISPR being used in cancer research. So CRISPR can just, in one area is immunotherapies that are being used right now to help try to treat cancer. So scientists try to train your immune system, which our immune systems are just amazing. And they have an ability to remember. So that's how you can build up immunity, right? They can remember past viruses, past infections. Well, scientists try to capitalize on that ability, and through CRISPR can get your immune system to very specifically fight off cancer cells, to locate and kill cancer cells. You have a type of immune cell called the T cell, and they can genetically modify your T cells to be able to specifically locate the cancer cells and kill them. That is an amazing thing, and it might very well be our future. Might very well be one of the things that helps us be able to combat cancer a lot better. CRISPR can be used to speed up the drug discovery process. I mentioned earlier being able to create pest-resilient crops. This has the potential to help, you know, poor countries with food shortages. But the risks are that as remarkably precise as it is to go in and make the edits, it's still not perfect. So there's always the risk of what is called off-target edits. And so that means it has the potential to maybe accidentally, along with editing the genes you're targeting, edit other genes in addition to your main target. But I honestly think scientists will be able to eliminate this, or vastly be able to reduce this eventually. Obviously, another huge issue is biological warfare. Scientists already use viruses as so-called vectors. When we call it a vector, that means it's the way it's delivering this mutation mechanism to cells. Viruses can just enter cells really easily, so they're used a lot. I use them in the lab to get my human DNA into things like insect cells. Well, there is the potential for biological warfare with this, you know. They can create viruses to deliver, instead of upgrades, mutations that fix things, downgrading type mutations that could really kill, be very good at killing. Another great risk, and one that many scientists like Dr. Doudna are concerned about, is that it will be used in irresponsible ways as a way to reenact the eugenic dreams of the past. In her book, this was fascinating. Doudna, as she was making the discovery of CRISPR, she was having a lot of nightmares, and she shares about her nightmares. And she shares about a recurring dream she had of meeting none other than Hitler. And he was very happy about her discovery. So one of the immediate concerns for Doudna and other scientists is something called germline editing. So that means that they're actually going in and editing your germ cells. So these are your, like in men, this would be the sperm and this would be the egg in females. So these are the cells that give rise to gametes and then to the fertilized egg and the zygote. And if you can edit those genes will be passed down to all subsequent generations. And Doudna and scientists are kind of concerned about that kind of editing. And that's what the Chinese doctor did that got him into so much trouble. She's also concerned that this idea of germline editing will be commoditized by the already very well-established fertility industry. I did not realize it's an $8 billion industry. And I have a quote here that she has that I think is really telling. She says, when fertility doctors eventually realize that they have the ability to enhance embryos' genomes with many, many more gene variants than could be provided by any given set of parents, will they really pause to reflect on the possible consequences? Or will they rush to make use of this newfound power, blindly grasping a genetic tool that, wielded in the dark, cannot be fully controlled?
I want to tell our listeners that last year, also, we had a discussion on this podcast with our author, Lisa Cooper, about is participating in the fertility industry ethical? And I highly suggest that everybody read that because it talks about the fact that the industry is not regulated. And also because of that, there's so much potential for incest, and incest has happened as people who are in these pods. And, you know, they discover, oh, I'm one of more than 500 kids that this guy was a donor. And if they live in that area, the likelihood of actually having an incestuous relationship with a sibling is very high, especially they don't know, you know, like you said, if it's done by any kind of fertility clinic, you don't know, it's just an anonymous donor. So since our article came out in 2023, I think we published it in May of last year, there was actual people that came forward that happened to them. They realized back, you know, when they were in college or something, that one of their college boyfriends is actually their brother. And so they're really freaked out about it, of course. But that is a very real world ethical dilemma that's happening now, since so many people do use sperm banks and things are not regulated, and donor insemination has been very big in recent years with reproductive technology. So the things that you just mentioned, that Rebecca just mentioned, are very real world, and there are serious ethical concerns about it in something that's not regulated.
Yeah, Dr. Doudna even mentions the pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. So IVF clinics are already using this, where they're looking at the embryos that they create in vitro and doing a genetic screening on them. And she admitted to something that I've been concerned about too. A lot of pro-life people are concerned about. She said there is sex selection going on then. And she's concerned, you know, especially in general, boys, especially in certain cultures, tend to be more favored. And so, yeah, there's just a lot of ethical issues with IVF.
And if you read some of these stories about people who are searching for their, you know, possible siblings, if they were a product of, you know, sperm donor insemination, they find siblings, you know, half siblings or whatever, and they have some odd genetic things. Like they never met somebody who like walks on their tiptoes all the time or something like that, you know, and they realize it's because of the it's particularly something that is in their genetic makeup that was because of this donor. So that just becomes, and then for some of them, when they are tracked down, they don't really want to be part of these, what they're called, sibling pods, because they're like, they cannot mentally and emotionally handle that there could be more than, let's say, they find out the sibling pod is 10. Well, there's one in Europe that's 550 so far, and that was as of a year ago. So I think that is also a heavy weight to a person to discover that this kind of information. So those are the cautions that we have. So I want to turn to the novel because it is, like we said, an action-packed kind of film with some, I would say, a little bit of sci-fi type of elements of, you know, post-apocalyptic kind of elements. So now, if you want to read Blake Crouch's Upgrade, and this was a good intro to what it's about, then stop here and then go read it and then come back, because we are going to we're going to try not to spoil it, but basically we will probably have to spoil it. So can you give us a brief summary about his novel Upgrade? And then the big question for me is, how scientifically accurate is this novel?
Yeah, well, I believe it's plausible, actually. At first, when I read it and before I read Doudna's book, I thought, how would they know all the genes? Because he gets these upgrades. I'll get into a second, but I was thinking, is that really possible? I mean, I know how complex the genetics are for certain traits, and it seemed like, you know, some of these traits that were being upgraded, like it was a little too simple. But I don't know. After reading her book, I think that it's more plausible than not. And that's why I think his book is so good, because I think it really serves to bridge the gap between the complexities of, say, her book and the molecular genetics and all the details of gene editing, and then some possible real-life consequences that could come with this technology. And that's what Crouch seems to be really good at. He seems to be able to take the science and then imagine, okay, what if this were to just blow up and become, you know, very powerful and very big? What could it do? And one of the interesting things, in an interview with Time, Crouch himself admitted he works with subject matter experts, supposedly, when he writes a book. And I can see that in this. But he began to realize that the central thesis of being able to upgrade humanity is actually more science than fiction and more now than future. So it's not so much science fiction anymore. So here's a brief synopsis. So it's set in the second half of this century, and the world that he's created is one in which gene editing has already been tried with crops, but it has failed with global catastrophic consequences, a global famine. And so because of this, gene editing is now highly regulated by the government. There's a lot of surveillance and suppression going on. They even created an organization, the Gene Protection Agency. So like kind of like the FBI. But the science is not going to be contained. It's already out there. So gene editing continues in these so-called black sites. And our protagonist, Agent Logan Ramsey, is out on one of these busts. He's busting a black site. And he unwittingly becomes infected by a virus at one of these black sites and becomes the first genetically modified human. And he was infected with a virus that was loaded with this whole panoply of CRISPR upgrades. And so the first half of the book is him trying to figure out who did this to him, because it seems to be very targeted to him in particular. And he's also having to come to grips with all these new heightened abilities, like in intelligence, in strength, in being able to just predict what people are going to do. I mean, just very heightened abilities. And he's having to come to grips with how that's changing him and how it's actually setting him apart from everyone else. So it becomes apparent that he is the first test case in a plot to force this entire gene editing technology upon the entire world through viral infection. And he finds himself in a situation where he has to choose, am I going to be a part of this plot or not? Because it is very clear that a lot of people will not survive the upgrade. It won't work with everyone, and it could have really disastrous effects. But it's a sort of ends justify the means on the thinking of the antagonists, because they want to fix the world. And they have foreseen that the human race is going to eventually kill itself off. And so the only reason why, you know, there's global warming and such as that brought into the book. And so in their minds, the only way they're going to save the human race is to force this upgrade on it. And that way, with the superior intelligence and powers, they won't destroy themselves. So our protagonist has to decide, am I going to be a part of this plot or not? So that's a lot of the book.
That is really interesting. And one thing, when I read some interviews with him and also listened to some on YouTube, he just is really all about, you know, sounds fantastical, but he really wants to make it real world. And he said specifically that he didn't want to put this book about CRISPR into some kind of dystopian, you know, post-apocalyptic world, you know, thousands of years in the future. He wanted to make it pretty plausible for the here and now, that though maybe this could happen in a couple of years, which is really fascinating that he does that. And as an aside for our listeners, he did option this particular novel to be a movie with Steven Spielberg's production company. So it's out there. When it will actually get made into movie, I don't know, but that was a couple of years ago. So hopefully they will get to the movie at some point sooner rather than later, because it's such an interesting book. So how does he handle basically not just the benefits, but the risks associated with gene editing? I felt like when I read the novel, it focused a little bit more on the risks, like how could it be potentially lethal? And I think, like you said, it was possible. Some of it seemed so almost crazy, like this is just right out of sci-fi, but he wanted to make it. He does have scientific advisors on his novels. So he did have one that was consulting with him, and he did want to make it. It's a potential thing, but it was almost kind of like superhuman kind of feat. So are there risks associated with gene editing?
Oh, absolutely. And we mentioned some earlier with just the keeping CRISPR to just focus on the target genes and not accidentally, mutating other areas, you know, offsite targets, right? And that's implied in this book as well, because, you know, it's very clear that this is a very dangerous gamble that the plot is unfolding, is that the plot to send these viruses. And the idea of sending CRISPR and viruses is actually very plausible because they're doing it already. I mean, like I said, I used viruses in the lab to infect insect cells with my genes, human genes that I wanted to put in them. It is already possible to put CRISPR in a virus and use it as a way of targeting certain cells. That is a very real. The science was spot on there. And then this idea that not everybody is going to be able to, you know, biology is so unique, and our protagonist was lucky because it didn't kill him, but he did get extremely sick at first. And it's very clear in the book that a lot of people are not going to survive that part of the upgrade. Now, when it gets into like his very specific upgrades, Crouch does go into very imaginative detail about the type, what it would be like to have heightened senses of like your sense of awareness. And at one point he talks about how the protagonist has to sort of split his consciousness so that he could focus on multiple things at once. One of the fascinating things is it gave him perfect recall in his memory, but that was actually kind of disturbing at first because, you know, having perfect recall makes you remember some awful things. And if we had perfect recall, it would be like kind of the way he described it, like a movie of your past, very clear movie playing in your mind. And he was remembering all this stuff that when he was his normal upgraded self, his brain had sort of suppressed. I thought that was actually very insightful for Crouch. Like maybe it's not good that we have perfect recall memory of everything, because what ended up is our protagonist had to kind of split his consciousness so that he could have that memory movie going on at the same time, focus on what's going on in the real world. So that was kind of interesting. It was very imaginative. I don't know. You know, at some points I was kind of like, I can't imagine that, but I don't know. I mean, our protagonist gets a very, his physical capabilities are vastly upgraded, but you know, we're making stronger police dogs, right? We are making ultra muscular police dogs. And that's kind of what happened to him. So I don't know. So I really do think Crouch did a good job of seeing the risks. I think more importantly, the risk of what mankind would do with such a power as gene editing, because the antagonist in the book use it in a way that's going to end up hurting a lot of people. And I think that was a very insightful of Crouch to see that, that it was going to be used by a few people to do a lot of damage to a lot of people. That makes sense.
In your article, and part of the title of your article, you make connections between Upgrade, Crouch's novel, and C.S. Lewis's book, The Abolition of Man. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about some of those connections you saw between those two books?
Well, Crouch made the connection first, actually. So I was really excited to see in the epilogue to the book. He begins it with this quote from C.S. Lewis's The Abolition of Man from the third chapter. And the quote is, "Human nature will be the last part of nature to surrender to man. We shall have taken the thread of life out of Clotho and henceforth be free to make our species what we wish it to be." And so that cued me in. I was like, wow, he's familiar with C.S. Lewis and that third chapter, which talks about this idea. Lewis was concerned about two realities that he was observing in his day. He was, you know, seeing a lot of scientific advancement in his day as well, but it was also being accompanied by the scientific community in general retreating from a shared belief in objective morality. And this is largely given to the popularity of materialistic naturalism. And so in that chapter, Lewis asks two important questions. He says, as science advances and we quote unquote win over nature, and this means like curing diseases and be able to control nature more and more, the real questions we must ask it are exactly who is winning. So is it all of us or is it just the few who have this technology and this power? And by what standard will they be refashioning humankind? And he was worried, as with all technological advances, that there are risks that that advance will concentrate power in the hands of the few over the hands of the many. And what I found striking about Crouch's book is this is exactly what he portrays. So the antagonist, the whole plot to inflict this virus on all of mankind without their consent. And he even shows that his protagonist feels this temptation at the end. So the epilogue is, the ending somewhat disappointed me because I was expecting more of out of my protagonist. And I believe he sort of caved in a sense, because he ends up, and I guess this is a spoiler, but he gives into the temptation to infect the human race with an upgrade of its own, one that he thinks isn't good. And again, this is against the will of the human race. So it really ends up being a violation, that same violation that C.S. Lewis was worried about.
It's interesting, in the book, the two main characters, were two characters that are surprisingly end up being pitted against one another, are siblings. And so they do kind of have that philosophical discussion, which isn't in some of his other books. Like, they directly talk about some of these things, and they're both concerned about what would happen. And I think this one thing that's interesting that I'd like our readers to note is, I find, and maybe you did too, that his books aren't just one of those like sci-fi thrillers that are kind of remote. He really puts in some real life relational kind of conflict or concern or love among characters and family. This one seems to me more than his other. I mean, I think all of his novels consider family, whether it's parents or children or something like that. Definitely is for sure the central conceit around the multiverse in Dark Matter is family. And what does it mean to love your family and what constitutes a family and so forth. But in this one, there's also that too, his immediate family, his concern for his own child, his own kid, and yet this conflict with his mother and daughter, where he feels like his mother was kind of cold and calculating, and how could he be different? So I don't know if you want to talk about any of that, because I thought that was very interesting for kind of, well, some reviewers called it a techno thriller, just kind of that sci-fi vibe to it.
I love it because what it shows, he personalizes it. And so it takes it out of that sort of theoretical, cold, disconnected sort of aspect that science fiction can sometimes have, and make it very real. Like, what would this do to a family at this technology? And if you could do it, and yes, it is, family is central here. I didn't want to give away too much of who's behind the plot and everything, but it's quite surprising. And yes, there are some, they wrestle. He and his sibling end up wrestling with, should we do this? How should we use this? We see how much it can help people, but we also know it's going to have all these other risks. Do we care for humanity in the abstract, these future generations, more than we care for the people that are right in front of us right now? And those are deep questions that especially this ability with CRISPR, because I mean, it is personal. I think it's even more personal than, say, like the atomic bomb. And I told my husband, you know, right now, one of the popular things for children to debate in schools, should we have dropped the bomb or not, you know, in Japan? Well, maybe in 10, 20 years, and maybe we need to start doing it now, having debates on should we use this technology, especially doing the kind of germline edits that are going to affect all subsequent generations. Because these are the kind of debates that are happening with scientists. And Doudna's book shows that the scientists themselves are split. They're kind of like these siblings, you know, represent these different approaches to that. And some of them are much more willing to take big risks right now for the future. And others are like, we can't do this to people, you know?
Well, that was something I was going to ask you. Are there scientists out there that share Lewis's and Crouch's concerns? Because one interview I heard with Blake Crouch, as it related to dark matter, which I think also applies to this, is he feels like in his storytelling, he's asking some of these questions because he's not sure if all the scientists are asking the questions. And he talks about that. I think where this book came in for me in terms of like religion and Christian apologetics is, what is human nature and can that be changed?
Yes. Yes. Excellent. Yeah. No, the scientists are. If you read Doudna's book, it was really neat to read her book along with his. I'd read his first, but then when I read hers, I was like, wow, he was really onto something here, because the scientists are struggling, but she's someone who really wants to get that public discussion going. But I think it's very hard because, well, I mean, you have the acronym CRISPR, right? And people then see clustered, regularly interspersed, you know, they see all those words and it just kind of, you go into shutdown. And most people don't have a background in molecular genetics and it's overwhelming. So that's what Crouch, by being able to sort of translate what's going on in the field into a story, is really helpful for people. But yes, the scientists are split. Some of the research that was done, I think it was 2019, what was happening is one research group was taking discarded embryos from IVF clinics. So they screen the embryos. Many of them end up getting destroyed. Many of them end up getting frozen. Many of them end up getting implanted, which they might not survive. Well, so they do the screening of the embryos, and sometimes they were having these embryos that had too many chromosomes in them, basically. It's a ploidy condition, they call it. And the embryo was not going to survive. So they were going to go ahead and discard these embryos anyway. Well, what this lab was doing was taking those embryos and then doing CRISPR research on them to see, can we genetically modify the germline and then these embryos survive. Well, they tried to get their work published. They didn't have a lot of success actually in the research, but they tried to get it published, and the top scientific journals like Nature and Science, I believe, were mentioned. They refused to publish his findings because it was so disturbing. But the researcher did find a lesser journal, but still respected, to publish his work. So I think that alone shows you that the scientific community is split, with still this sort of a proper sort of like, let's slow down here. And then another side that's like, no, what, you know, we should do this anyway. You know, this is great science. We're going to be able to do all this stuff. We're going to have all this power to, like, you know, help people. And so, yeah, Dalton herself was very concerned and was, I share several quotes in the article where she's like, we have to have a public discussion of this. But the problem is, as, you know, Crouch mentions, it's just really hard to translate those technicalities of the lab into sort of a philosophical discussion that doesn't go over people's heads. And I think Crouch does this wonderfully.
Well, it's interesting because this idea of, you know, when you think of science, and here's the thing too, in our modern world, people think of science as separate from faith and ethics. It's like in a different bucket. So science is truth. And these other things are malleable, like ethics. It just depends.
Scientists think that way, by the way. Many scientists think that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's, if we've talked about in the podcast, like, how did we come to this point where we are now? You know, we can trace it all the way back to, you know, probably the Renaissance and just some of the different thinking that emerged at that time. But really, you know, when we think about what they're doing, they're going to be able to have this power over, you know, ethical decisions that they are not philosophically thinking about. And should they be able to exert this control over subsequent generations, as we said, because this is spoilers, that's something they're talking about as they, you know, come to this big head of, you know, kind of almost a physical battle with, I would say, almost superpowers, you know, at the end of the novel. And what does that mean for the actual person living out there? Because we're thinking, well, science, oh, we trust all these experts. And yet, are they doing things in the lab that will impact us and we don't know it? Like, oh, now we can do in vitro fertilization and somebody is making a family in a different, unique way. And Christians haven't thought about it. And yet now there's all these sibling pods out there. So should we be able to trust the experts, really?
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to encourage total skepticism, right? Because that's not good. The experts, they're good at what they know, but I think you touched on it, this idea that things like philosophy and ethics have been siloed off into their own little areas. And then we have science, and scientists just want to do science. And I understand that. And some of them, you know, they get in that lane and they become very, very good at it. And that's all they know. And they don't think about these ethical issues. And, you know, you almost, to them, they're like, well, I'm not an expert in that. And you think, well, you know, we all need to, in some way, we have to be experts or at least somewhat knowledgeable in ethics and philosophy, at least a minimal level, because of this siloing effect that's happened in the fields like science away from philosophy and theology, this is precisely what Lewis was concerned about. They don't tend to think deeply about these things, and they don't tend to actually believe in objective morality themselves. They believe that, you know, evolution gave rise to our moral impulses and whatnot. And so they don't really think through those. And so what Lewis warns in Abolition of Man, what happens to all of us when we do that, we begin to be driven by either pure intellect or pure emotion. And I think you see that in Crouch's book with our antagonists. You have the mother, or the one character that's driven by pure intellect, others that are driven by emotion, but none of them are really ethical, ultimately, because all of it's divorced from considering things theologically, or at least this idea that there's some objective morality outside of themselves that they need to, you know, align their life with. So yeah, I think in a sense, as Christians especially, we should realize that just a lot of these scientists are not Christian. So we have a responsibility to understand, at least have a workable knowledge of the science, and then understand the theological and philosophical, understand that they're not going to actually be dealing with a lot of the philosophical and theological aspects. So that's our responsibility. We need to bring that to the table for the culture, because it's just not being done.
Well, what about, how do you address the, you know, the average lay Christian? They're like, well, I'll just leave it to the experts or the Christian philosophers. Like, it doesn't really impact me. Why should I even care about this topic?
Yeah, well, it is impacting us. And I think as Christians, you know, those of us that are strongly pro-life, it is impacting, you know, there are human beings that are being created and in labs, and we need to think about that to some degree, especially if we're going to engage in any of the technology ourselves. So if we have this opportunity to perhaps use CRISPR in the future, it's really important to understand all the philosophical and theological implications of this. And in all of this, I keep coming back to the fact that CRISPR is a naturally occurring bacterial defense system with the emphasis on natural. It was always there, just waiting for us to discover it one day. And I think God knew this in his sovereignty, right? We're made in his image and we love to study the works of his hands. And also there's a huge drive to alleviate suffering of others. So the moment we saw this, we discovered this ability to edit genomes, it just, you know, the temptation is there, not unlike, you know, the apple, the proverbial apple in the garden. And I think God in his sovereignty knew this. And I think, well, for me as a science teacher, I have a burden to teach my young students how to understand the science, but also think critically about the science theologically and philosophically. And like I said, we need to understand these technologies if we're going to use them ourselves. I think we also have to have a well-developed and robust understanding of human dignity. I think that's one of the things I noticed in the Upgrade book is the protagonists and the antagonists were all really struggling between recognizing, wanting to honor human dignity, but also wanting to relieve human suffering. And there was a tension between the two. Again, a researcher like Doudna was strongly motivated to develop the technology to relieve the people suffering with things like sickle cell anemia, which is a terrible disease. Now, she never intended it to be used to upgrade human beings, but that was inevitable in some ways. And that's one of the things I like about the characters in Upgrade. None of them are really diabolical. They all have good intentions. IVF itself, you know, to give an example of us doing this, IVF itself was developed to ease the pain of infertile couples, right? But at what cost, right? So I think as Christians, this just underscores the fact that we have to have a really well-grounded ethic surrounding human dignity, because this is what's going to draw the boundary lines on technologies like this so that we know, okay, just how far is too far, you know, when it comes to ending suffering. And that's a step too far, just like the Chinese scientist that was upgrading the embryos so that they would be HIV resistant, right? Well, that sounds like a great thing, but did he go too far? And honestly, I think we should be encouraged in the sense that we really need to be at the forefront of this conversation, because I think we should be encouraged because we have the best grounding of human dignity out there. We ground human dignity in a transcendent law of God, so it's not subjective. We have the doctrine of the Imago Dei being made in God's image. And we have God's salvific intervention in our world, the incarnation. I love to tell my students, when we study like mitosis and meiosis and everything, I like to tell them, you were a single cell at one point, and so was I. And then we were embryos. And the thing that's amazing is that Jesus was too. So the fact that the God of the universe himself, in the fullness of times, at the time of his choosing, entered into all the stages of human development like we did, I think it dignifies humanity in a way that nothing else can. And it gives significance to human beings in all stages that nothing else can. So I really think we need to be pushing ourselves to the front of this conversation.
Well, this is certainly a lot to think about and ponder. And it's really important because, like you said, Christians themselves are starting to use these technologies specifically because of the fall. There's some people that cannot have children. And so for one reason or another, they have to have as an option, for example, you know, some of these reproductive technologies, whether it's artificial insemination or, you know, in vitro, things like that. And so there's a lot of ethics that we have to think about so that we can really consider what is happening. Well, on a much lighter note, it's almost the holidays. Thanksgiving and Christmas is this time of year. So what is your favorite holiday meal side dish?
I have to think about that because I love them all. Holiday meal side dish. Probably I love stuffing. Stuffing's delicious.
Stuffing goes with a lot of different holiday main dishes like ham or turkey. So with that, thank you so much, Rebecca, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you.
You've been listening to episode 422 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest, Rebecca Valerius, has written an online book review article for the Christian Research Journal. Her article is called Gene Editing and the Abolition of Man, a Reflection on Upgrade by Blake Crouch and the New Science of CRISPR. You can read this book review for free, no paywall, at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.